Away the Lads brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix City. I am back. Patrick is back after a week off.
We missed you.
No, you didn't at all.
No, not at all.
Don't lie. So as you can hear, Cam is here and Frosty is here.
Good evening.
Hello.
And Dave is away this week. He's busy. Is he overseas?
Junket.
Work all junket. Right. Cool. So it's three of us and in Dave's place. We're joined by a special guest from the Wellington Phoenix, Stephen Taylor. How you doing, Stephen?
Very well, thank you.
Enjoying your time in Wellington so far?
Yeah, very good. Obviously, the lads have made it very welcome for me from day one. And obviously, good time out in the Gold Coast and Melbourne. So just getting used to the training regime out here
in the city. We've turned the weather on for you as well, haven't we?
This is nothing compared to back home in Newcastle. So for me, it's, this is not even cold.
He's loving it, mate. Like, turn up, he's gone up and been to the Gold Coast. He's tanned to fuck. Yeah. What is that about?
This is Dubai, to be fair. I had a good full month in Dubai. I've come out and see you guys all wrapped up. It's just T-shirt weather.
Yeah, you're on a polo and nothing more. We were standing outside and another member of staff who's here tonight got very cold outside. So I've been told to mention that she's your favourite member of staff, apparently. So.
Yeah. Always looking after the boys. If anything, if they've got any problems, she deals with all the stuff off field. So Courtney, it's a big help.
Courtney's loving this conversation.
Now that Johnny's gone, of course, she's all of our favourite members of staff.
She's the only one left, isn't she?
Careful when there's a guest on. By the looks of your Instagram, you're loving Wellington. Like,
that's what the boys keep saying every day. Yeah. I wake up in the morning. I wake up probably a good hour and a half early than what I normally do back home because the views they've got out here are absolutely incredible. And the amount of people back home in the UK that even say they can't believe that the views and the city itself is as beautiful as what it looks. And I'm in awe of it, literally. I keep pinching myself. I'm sitting in the lounge and looking out to the views and thinking, this is incredible. I'm literally down by Oriental Bay. We have lunch in different little spots with views with the team. And it's good to obviously interact with the players after training. We go for nice lunches. And I think it's one of the big things we've got is a good team spirit. You know, we have barbecue nights together. It's the first time ever I've had like fire pits where the lads just go and chill out, and I've never ever done that back home in the UK. So I think the icicles if I did that in Newcastle. But no, that's very good. I think the lads have looked after you well. One thing I could never do is organise a barbecue and cook. One of the biggest things for me, I've never cooked a decent meal. I've always had a George Foreman grill. If anybody's asking me to cook, I'm literally one of them, can't cook, won't cook. So it'll be a task maybe this season. I don't know if Wellington's going to try and get a cook night or whatever it's going to be, but I'll be definitely bottom of that list.
I'm sure you can try and get some tips from some of the boys.
There's some good ones there. I think I speak to all the lads. They can all cook in the houses, and I've got to rely on ready, obviously, meal prep food. So meal prep company supply the food for me every 3 to 4 days, which helps me, makes my life easy.
Totally.
But I'm not very good in the kitchen. My oven is brand spanking new. No problem at all.
Never been used, never been touched.
And to be fair, I wouldn't know what to do with that.
I tell you, I could use one of those meal prep companies, eh? That'd be nice. Great. Just turn up at home, chuck food at the kids, and then chuck them to bed. That'd be brilliant.
Ooh, it's easy. Or maybe just stick it there. Happy days.
Yeah.
Work with Libby Kikacha's family.
Oh, see, that's the key, eh? And then you can go to La Bella Italia every single night for dinner.
I've just read something actually the other day about his dad. I think top 70 in the world.
Yeah, pizzerias.
Yeah, it's fantastic for him. We went there before one of the games, pre-match, and the Italian food was top draw. And I said to him, "You're onto a winner there with your dad, by the way."
Yeah,
very good.
We had a friend who got married, and they had their reception in there. It was one of the most outstanding like layouts of food I've ever had at a reception. It was incredible.
All right, bringing us back to football, because we could talk about food all night, and we do usually.
There's a reason why we're the size we are.
Well, you're in a smaller size now,
much smaller.
But we'll talk about a little bit of football. Obviously, your background is that a lot of the time for your career, you've been playing for Newcastle United. That's how I guess you saw Wellington for the first time 4 years ago now. We were talking about before we recorded, but I guess, yeah, Newcastle United and you came out here. Was that what kind of spurred you on to wanting to come back and play here?
It was something that came to mind in the summer, speaking to Michael Bridges. So I had a good chat with him and speaking to players and ex-managers about the opportunity of coming out and playing the A-League. But I think it was Michael Bridges and my time here, 2014 with Newcastle. We spent a lot of time down by the marina. And when we obviously played at the stadium, the atmosphere was incredible that day. So I did know a bit about it, a bit about the players. There's a few players who played who are still here now. So for me, it was a good feel of it because there's obviously teams in Europe, but the teams that I was speaking to in Europe, they weren't particularly wanting to move to the next kind of level and they didn't really want to benefit themselves. And I think now, listen to Wellington, there's a lot of players who were hurt from last year and I think the fans as well. So for me to come in now is a good time, a new era under a new management, and the players are hungry and he's brought the players who he wants in. And looking at the players now, they're looking very fit and competitive and training every day now.
So this one about Mark Redan, given that's come up, what do you think he's bringing from his experience to a side that, as you said, had a pretty rough season last year? And what's he bringing and the qualities that he's bringing to the team at the moment?
You've got to remember as well, you've got to look at his CV. I think he's a winner himself and he's a leader. He demands that every single day. Everything we do, you play to win, you train to win. And if you're on the losing side, you'll pin up obviously big punishments, and whether it's extra running or you're in the goal and your backside's out and you're going to be getting hit with the ball. He just doesn't, he wants to obviously create a winning mentality. And the training sessions, there's times we train on fatigue. He's pushing us up to our levels, see how, which characters can deal with it. And he wants everyone to be, pulling the same way that he wants. I think as a player, he knows how to win the A-League. He knows what it takes to win this league, and he knows every team well. So for us to have that experience there for us, it's obviously down to us now on the pitch to deliver.
And all the boys are buying into that philosophy of his?
Yeah, you can see how hungry the lads are. Like I've just touched upon before, everyone last year, they were very hurt, I think, from where we finished. So moving forward now, we've like I said, we've got a manager who... he's played the A-League, he knows what it's all about, and he's bringing his experience to us now, so it's only going to benefit hopefully us, and to learn from the boss is going to be it's going to be very good.
Obviously you've worked under some quite high profile managers in your time. You were raffling off a few of the names earlier, and I recognise a few of them before Cameron Frostby called me out for that. But what's it like working under somebody who, this is his first time at this level, but obviously has an immense experience in Australia? What's it like working under somebody that like that, who's also trying to make their mark in the league?
The great thing I think about obviously New Zealand, Australia, the sports science out here. It's a class above itself. I think that's why you've attracted the best around the world. And they've gone to, I was at Qatar and Aspetar, and you hear the people out there, and you're from New Zealand, Australia. They've got the best of the best. And coming out here to obviously Wellington and seeing the sports science behind the scenes, how they do it, everything is there for them. I've played under managers who haven't had that kind of research in depth, and they've only really had a couple of, maybe an assistant manager and another coach, and they've relied on them to get the players through a season. And every year football is just getting better and better. I think look how the MLS 5 years ago was never where it was now.
Totally.
And it's only getting better, and I do believe now with the A-League, it's the exact same scenario now. We're getting the best sports science, best people around, and it's only going to benefit seeing the likes of Honda, you know, coming to the A-League now, and it's attracting. And back home, and you hear on Sky Sports News, everyone's talking about, oh, you got the Hondas of the world, there's all these A-Leaguers, the marquee players in each club. And for a defender, it's going to be difficult. You're playing against the best players, you know, around the world, who you're going to be tested every game.
Do you see much of the A-League as a UK-based player?
We watch it when you're in training. They've got the highlights, they show the previous games beforehand. Yep. So we're catching up on that. And if football all day is just continuously replaying up what's been happening in the football world. So we see all that.
Yep.
And now it's refreshing for me to be out here and be involved in it. And behind the scenes, when you've got the sports science, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's the extras and how much football is now, advanced stages now. I think the World Cup, you look at teams all around the world are surprising people.
Yeah. So this Sports Island stuff interests me because I would just assume off the bat that actually the big clubs in the UK, like Newcastle, for example, would have all of that ready to go. But by the sounds of it, it's potentially not at the same level as we're doing it here.
Not at first, no. I think as the years go on, there's obviously people have been there for years, over 35 years, mm-hmm. and they've got their routine that they stay in.
Right, I see.
But obviously with football now, it's moved on. You know, you come in the pitches now, the iPads, all these, the monitors, GPS systems and everything. It's just you can't cheat in training. The camera's out every day watching every training session.
Yeah.
So the manager, he'll go up after training session, watch the training, see the players' overloads, and mm-hmm. He'll report next day. You got to have your wellness tests. So you wake up the morning before 8 o'clock. You've got the app.
Yeah.
How you're feeling, any fatigueness, you're letting the sports science know. So when they're going to the manager's office, you know, these are all these things I've never had as a professional.
Right.
When I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, I think even now, I think if I had this sort of, you know, sports science around me when I was 18 coming through, I think it can only make you even better.
Yeah.
And these lads who are coming through the system now, it's only going to benefit them. And to work around the experience that we have around the squad, the characters that we have, and we're building a good culture and a good squad.
Cam?
So you've had the fortune of playing some pretty big name players, some like Alan Shearers and Michael Owen. How has like training with those guys and playing with them kind of shaped the player that you are?
I think watching them off the pitch was a big thing for me. The things they did before training, the way they trained every day, they wanted to be the best in everything they did, and they were like leaders on the pitch. The high demands is. I was very lucky. I left school 16. I missed out the academy at the time and went straight into the first team setup. So I was with Bobby Robson as my manager, and he would put me against Alan Shearer every day to toughen me up. I was a 16-year-old skinny kid coming out of school, and I had to toughen up. And I learned by, you know, training with better players. It was only going to improve me. I was getting knocked about a lot, yes, but toughen me up. I went out on loan to League Two side for 1 month, a team called Wickham Wanderers, and I was against players who were hungry, and you're not just going to play in the reserve league, where I was just happy to play against players who weren't getting a game for their first team club. I went out on loan, got my experience playing lower league football, getting battered about, understanding what it means for people, because what I didn't understand and appreciate at the time was, as a 16 or 17 year old lad, was these relied on bonuses to pay for the mortgages. And when you're 16, 17, you don't understand that. Mm. And it's like coming into the game now where you see a lot of players rely on bonuses and how much it means for their families, for obviously their mortgages that they pay. I never understood all that as a young lad. I was very fortunate. I had a mum and dad who supported us, who were fantastic and gave me that opportunity to never miss a day of training. And always supplied everything for me. But I come to now to Wellington and seeing the young boys, they've got, you know, everything they're given to them. So it's for us now, it's we have to deliver on the pitch. You know, we've got all the tools in front of us, but it's down to us as the players to go out there, perform and bring the crowds in, because we're the only ones on the pitch that's going to be, you know, bringing the crowds to get back to what I knew about Wellington when we, Newcastle United, came here to watch and play.
Mm-hmm. We can't promise crowds like that every single day out. That was a big occasion for us getting.
You've got to set targets, and that's a target. I think there's no reason why we can't, and I think it's that's going to be a goal for Wellington fans as well. And for me, I want to see that. I know the manager's touched upon it,
yep.
and he has made it very clear to us. It's down to us as players, so we have to deliver on the pitch if we're going to drive the fans back and you know, get the Westpac bouncing.
So you mentioned Wickham, League Two team. At the time you were there, it would have been under Tony Adams, so former England and Arsenal captain, obviously, a bit of a legend and central defender as well. You must have learned an awful lot in just that short period, because it was like six appearances or something, I think.
Yeah, it was just six appearances in 1 month, and he's my idol growing up. So when Bob Robson pulls me in the room, tells me Tony Adams wants to take you on loan, for me it was like a dream come true to go and work under my idol and manager. So that kind of toughened me up as well. I think getting that a bit of experience made me hungry to come back and believe, saying, listen, I want that next step now. I'm not going to just be happy to stay in the reserves. I'm after someone's shirt now. There was seven centre-halves ahead of me. I never once thought I was going to be happy to stay in seventh position. There was a few injuries along the way for them, and they moved aside, and I got my opportunity and took it. And one thing you do is when you've got your shirt, you keep your shirt. And it's up to you on the pitch to deliver week in, week out, do the right stuff. And, you know, the Newcastle fans have had a great relationship with them. And, you know, I play for my hometown club and I lived my dream then. And still now, to this day, I'm still living my dream.
So you Newcastle fan as a boy?
Always, yeah. We had my dad paid for a bond, so where you have your name on the seat at St. James Park, oh, yeah, win every home game. So my dad spent £500, and you know, we weren't the wealthiest family, but he was so passionate and he wanted me to live that kind of life. And the closest thing I would ever come to getting on the pitch was being a ball boy. And I always remember I'd always be behind the goal, so I could always look up to my parents and hopefully get on the pitch, because there's always going to be shots, so I can get on the pitch as much as I can. And I never thought I'd get that opportunity. I thought I'd have to start and play maybe lower leagues before I come back up. But yeah, I kept going for it. And you need a bit of luck along the way. Mm. I definitely believe that. But yeah, obviously Sir Bob Robson gave me my opportunity, Mallorca, Real Mallorca in the UEFA Cup and against Samuel Eto'o. And a legend of a player.
Jesus.
And I'll never forget
that. Debut, that's impressive.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah.
You mentioned Samuel Eto'o's. Who would have been your toughest opposition over that time?
The toughest guy I played against, I think Ruud van Nistelrooy. For me, he was one of the best.
You don't even know who that is.
No, I do. Manchester United, thank you very much.
Dutch legend, yeah.
Yeah.
No, for him, I think obviously Man United, he was in his prime at Manchester United when they were winning the league and everything. I think Didier Drogba. So, but I think for me, Ruud van Nistelrooy was the one that kind of always remember, who was, you know, the best I've ever come across.
So after you left Newcastle, you moved to Portland, is that correct? How does that come about, a move to
So from Newcastle,
like
I was actually off to Turkey. So I went to Istanbul to speak to a club and just about to sign for a club in Turkey. And then the military coup happened.
Right.
So this is all agreed.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was in a restaurant on the night, just obviously signed during the day. It was all pending a medical the next day. And then the military coup happened. So got a phone call from my dad. He's seen the news and all the stuff that's going on. No, I didn't see it. And I see everybody leaving the restaurant. And then we couldn't get back over the bridge to the hotel. So you had to go the other side, the motorway. You're going up to find another hotel to stay for the night.
Yeah.
Obviously, all the hotels all booked. So we struggled to get a hotel, eventually found somewhere. I'm panicking at this point. My mum and dad weren't too happy. And for me, I was very fortunate. The people who looked after us out in Turkey made us feel safe, so I felt okay.
Yeah.
But that was something that I didn't want to be involved in.
No, fair enough, I guess.
I managed to come away from that, and an opportunity came with Portland Timbers. And for me at the time, it was all about getting as many games as possible in a short period of time. And they offered me a 2.5-year contract at Portland Timbers. So they gave me security at the time. I had a couple of injuries previous year. I played 15 games, I think, in a few months, and it gave me a massive confidence when getting phone calls from the Championship. Was Mick McCarthy.
Yep.
He said, would you fancy coming back and coming to Ipswich? So I had to leave at October time. I couldn't sign because the English transfer window didn't open until January.
Yeah.
So I was stuck there till January time. And then, but I tell you what, I love the opportunity to go out with the MLS to get the quick games and understand what was about out there. And they had some fantastic supporters.
Yeah,
Portland Timbers are unbelievable.
Yeah, the Timbers Army.
As the MLS, I think they're probably the best supporting club. So it was great for me. Got massive confidence playing the games, coming back, and took it from there.
So you scored on your home debut?
Yeah, against Seattle.
Against Seattle.
Which was mad. 5-1 we won. 5-2.
Yeah.
And scored a header from a free kick, yeah.
So that you got given a piece of the log that they cut off for you. Have you still got that?
I've still got that, yeah.
Could you bring it into New Zealand?
I had to get it sent back home, so it cost me a few quid to get it back.
Yeah.
But now it was a nice little little trophy kind of thing I put in the...
Pat's actually a Timbers fan, so this is why he's quite keen about that.
Well, there's also the Kiwi connection there as well, because Gavin Wilkinson, obviously the general manager there, is
Jake
Kiwi,
Leeson
and Jake Leeson plays for them. So
I spoke to Gavin before I came out here, and he only had good things to say about the club and about, like I said, Jura, the characters that are out here. And for me, it was a no-brainer. I think everybody who spoke very highly of the club and about the players that are here anyway.
So when you were at Newcastle, there was a lot a lot of managers that went through there in the period of time. an awful lot. And being a Liverpool fan, there's definitely one answer I'm hoping for. But who was that best manager that you worked under while there? There's three possible answers, but there's one I'm expecting.
The one that you're going to look for is obviously Kevin Keegan.
Yes.
Yeah. I think
it wasn't him.
Yeah, it wasn't actually, to be fair, I was expecting you to say Rafa, but I'll definitely accept Kevin Keegan.
You've got to look at obviously Rafa, Sir Bobby Robson, but Kevin Keegan, he's the one that all the supporters loved, I think, as a manager. He came the closest to winning the league for Newcastle. The one when we had obviously a good points difference to Manchester United. We blew it, but as a manager, he just knew how to treat his players. I think he was very good man management skills, which players needed a cuddle, which players needed a kick up the backside. Mm-hmm. But he got the best out of them. He looked like David Ginola, Peter Beardsley, Faustino Asprilla, you know, Les Ferdinand, Alan Shearer, the players that he had was unbelievable. And I think for me to work under him, I was like a fan all over again.
You go for the perm haircut as well?
I don't think I can get them curls. I don't think I can get them. That was the old school way, but the high shorts that they used to have, and he used to join in training. He still had it, and competitive. He put his foot in, and old school kind of way. He loved it.
How about Sir Bobby Robson? Working under him must have been something special, because there was a reason he's knighted. He's an absolute legend in the game in England.
Yeah, I think look at the players who he had to deal with over the years. He's managed the biggest clubs in the world. You know, he's won the major stuff. His reputation's all around the world. Everybody who's worked under him loved him, only has good things to say to him. But when you're on a training pitch day in, day out, even when he was coming to the end of his days at Newcastle, he's running about and he's even heading balls, and everyone's looking going, we can't believe this. You know, he's like a granddad out there for you. And there was times, I remember we had a few defeats and I wasn't playing at the time. I was only a young lad and I was believing myself that I wanted to be given that opportunity, and I wasn't happy. So I went in to the change room and I was speaking to a few of the players, and I said, I'm going to go have a chat with them. I'm not happy. I should be playing. I'm going to have a word with them. So I went into the room. I all built myself up to go and have a good little shout about with him. And I came out with him. He came with his arm around me, and I was smiling, arm around me, couldn't believe what he's just done. He just turned it around and he made me feel $1 million. The way he was as a guy, he just had that gift. He just knew what players, what made them tick, and how to get the best out of them. And for me to be working under someone like him was, that was like a dream as well. Yeah,
and I can imagine. Even in the A-League, and when we see it with coaches like Graham Arnold, for example, I don't know how much you know about the coaches that have been here, but the ones who seem to treat the players like their family get the most out of them. And in a league where it's so tight anyway, that's that 20% difference that can be the difference between winning the league and not even making the playoffs.
Well, the boss has said that already about when he was a player, about the managers who he had. He goes, when you get treated good, you feel good. And I think you get the respect from the players when you're honest. And the time where you might not play, but the manager will pull them in the office and tell you, listen, this is why you're not playing. And the best thing for me is explain the player and just be totally honest. When you start blanking the player, that's when you lose relationships. Mm. And sometimes when you lose one relationship, you lose three or four in the dressing room. And it becomes like a virus. And one thing you need is your players, because I think learning from the managers who have been successful, and when we were in Europe every year when I was a young one, the players who had tight-knit group, experienced characters, you had a very good characters through the core of the side, and that always got us through. And I think when it is going to be tough, like there'll be times this season where it'll be tough, it could be like a month of poor results, whatever, but you need players to stick together and fight through it.
What was the reaction to the loss in the FA Cup? Was it sticking together and fighting through? Obviously, the result being far less than ideal and what anybody had hoped for, but
probably I remember the similar sort of thing I've had to that would be the year Newcastle got relegated, mm-hmm. and we first game of the season, just before that we got beat 7-0 to a League 2 side, and that kind of alarm bells rang, and it was a good kick at the backside.
Yeah.
And I think the reaction was perfect, because the change room was flat, everyone was hurt. It was quiet in that, I think it was about an hour bus journey back to the hotel, and not one person speaking. And that's how it should be. I think it's got to hurt. And the lads felt that bit of bit of hurt, because previously we've been training hard. We've had two sessions a day every day, and it was all good. It was good vibe. Everyone very happy. But this is probably something that you do need. And sometimes when it's all going good, you do need a kick up the backside. And definitely it's a reality shock.
And the reaction from the coaches as a result has been positive, I guess?
100%. The training sessions are hard. It's just got harder. And he's made sure of it. He's watched the game over, the training sessions, everything. And he's made it very clear that his standards, and we have to set the standards very high. And I think for obviously the Brisbane game that we played, and we want to start getting our obviously winning mentality there.
For a bit of a seasoned pro like you, it's very unusual seeing someone who always smiles on the pitch as much as you do.
Yeah, notice that particularly against Bentley. You're actually enjoying the game, even though we're losing.
Yeah, at one stage, someone went through Libby Coucher and you just went over the big smile on his face, threw your arm around him and just had a word. And by the end of it, he was having a wee laugh. What's your secret? Because I sure as hell can't do that.
I think as a young kid, I always maybe worried about too much thing and just too serious, kind of thinking, maybe overthinking now and again. But learning from like Gary Speed and experienced players like Jonathan Woodgate is if you make a mistake, you get on with it. And that's what I'm saying to young lads. If you make a bad pass or you make a mistake, don't dwell on it. Don't keep thinking about it. Just next one, do a simple pass. You got to enjoy what you do. And people say, oh, you got pressure games. Do you feel the pressure? I don't feel any pressure in any game I go into. I feel excitement. You know, I'm one of the guys who get it running on the pitch and there's all the fans who are watching. But it's up to us to deliver. And I love that kind of like challenge. All my career I've had a challenge, and that's why one of the biggest reasons why I've come here.
What's your personal goal for your time in Wellington? Obviously, the team will have goals about league position, that kind of thing. What are you hoping to get out of your time here?
I think it's obvious when people start to see me come here. What happened last year, people say, oh, I finished second bottom. For me, it's the biggest challenge now is, I think, putting people in their place. And it's excitement, definite. The hunger in the belly.
Yep.
And I could have took the easy route and gone somewhere in Europe and had it easy. Mm-hmm. But it's not my makeup to do that. You know, like the manager was saying, he goes, he had all the offers, and you could have got more money elsewhere. He goes, it's not about that now. I live comfortable. Everything's back home is all comfortable now. It's all about playing. And you want to play week in, week out. And you want to be around a squad that is feeling the same desire as myself. And I'm very lucky I'm in a squad that are hungry players, and they're all trying to get the next level and want to better themselves. So I'm around a good culture, and it's refreshing for me to go in there and see the smiles on their faces. If you see our training sessions, it's a good laugh that beforehand, but when we get out there, it's serious. Everyone wants to win, and you don't want to be on that losing side. And the punishments are bad, and that's what the manager wants to create.
So the attitude towards coming here, when you've come here, would that be similar to not leaving Newcastle when they got relegated, for example, where other teams were coming in and interested in you? Obviously, I think there was, I read about Everton being interested in possibly somebody else, Chelsea, and obviously staying with them and, you know, bringing them back up into the Premier League?
Yes, four opportunities leaving the first time we got relegated down to the Championship, and everyone's saying, oh, if you don't leave, you're going to lose the chance to play for England because you won't get selected for England if you're in the Championship. That's a sacrifice I took. People say, yeah, you could double your wages, you can get this, you can get that. People were too concerned about that, especially as a young player. All you want to do is play football. I see too many players in the game now where they go for big money and they don't play, and you get forgotten about. All you want to do is you want to play football. You want to enjoy your football, and there's no better feeling. You're driving in every day, and I'm living out here. A beautiful place. You've got unbelievable views of Wellington, and I make sure everybody back home can see that. They've got to have the horrible drive through. Nothing to look at. Miserable, boring training grounds. I've got a fantastic training
ground. I've been in the North England, I know.
You know exactly what I'm talking about here. Whereas I come here, there's a golf course next to the training ground. You've got sea views next to the training ground.
Yeah.
The pitches are crisp, they're perfect. And it's an enjoyable place to play, man. You just want to play week in, week out. That's all football's about. Don't be sitting there and happy to pick up your wage. And that's why I've always got a smile on my face, and I always always will this season, and just hope we can do well.
So there's a couple of other new guys in the team. Obviously, Philip and...
Michael,
thank you. Sorry. Drew a blank. I was too busy worried about his last name.
I think we're trying to pronounce
his surname. Yeah.
Just call him Copper?
Just call him Copper, yeah.
Okay, good.
Nice.
Yep.
So how are they fitting in?
They've been good. Obviously, the good thing is we've... went to the Gold Coast and they had to get up and sing, and everyone obviously got to sing initiation songs, and
yeah, you have to hear as well, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, you got to get up, and that's what it's all about.
Some good pipes on you, I heard.
I tell you what, it's the most nerve-wracking thing for anybody. You can play in front of how many thousands, but when you have in front of your own teammates and staff, it's the most nerve-wracking thing.
Yeah.
You get the sweats, everything. It's it's a horrible feeling, because all eyes on you then. It's, you're out of your comfort zone, aren't you?
Yeah.
But no, the lads were great there. They've interacted. They get involved. After football, we go for we go lunch together, coffees, and I've just started to understand the Australian, New Zealand coffees, Piccolos. So just Piccolo coffees that you have out here. So the lads, we enjoy that together as a team. But it's good, everyone interacting together, because I've been around cultures where it's like you go to train, you don't see the players until the next day. So it's nice for the lads to do everything and the new boys join in.
So Newcastle, is it like Geordie Shore?
I thought that was coming.
Have a look at his watch and then you ask the question again.
You get the freebies.
It's just literally everywhere I've been, no matter where, they always mention Geordie Shore. You know, you've got Ant and Dec, you've got Alan Shearer, everyone just goes Geordie Shore.
Yeah, I am so predictable. This is really bad.
No, it's nothing like that, to be fair. There's just like a reality show, and it took off, to be fair. Everyone seems to like it abroad, and
I've never seen it.
Not quite sure why, to be honest.
Yeah, that's for your judgment.
Yeah. I don't understand the fascination with it.
God, I agree with Patrick. I feel dirty.
I mentioned this before, but I had prepared a game to play with you, and I've left it at the office. But I'm so sorry.
We had a jingle as well.
I hadn't recorded the jingle yet, but we're gonna play Newcastle or Oldcastle with you.
Okay.
Where I was gonna show you images of two castles, and I was gonna get you to choose which one.
Which one's which one's new? Which one's old?
That'll translate so well on the audio medium that we have,
especially when you're not going to play it.
So, I'm going to do it without photos. I'm just going to name two castles.
You're going to name two castles, okay?
And get you to choose which one you think was built earlier.
Can you just put a gap in now, so that just in case this is as shit as it sounds?
That's horribly wrong. Okay.
I'd like to point out before this that we actually won a football media award.
And we're about to hand it back.
I think we already had.
We're New Zealand football audio broadcasters of the year. This is classic segment. Okay, Leeds Castle or Dover Castle? Which one do you think was built first? This is terrible.
This is just
that
bad.
That is awful. Don't even answer. That is shit.
Well, just the one.
Well, this is a football thing, not. No.
Yeah, okay. All right. It was Leeds Castle. It was built in 1179, and Dover Castle 1050. Turns out the game's also really hard, because places don't just get built in a single year. They get built over time, and it's hard to find dates. Anyway. Yeah.
That is so getting cut. All of that.
Oh my God, this is possibly your worst bit.
I'm really sorry, Stephen. we're having a professional chat, and then I just do that. So,
all right, that's okay. It's something new.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll never happen again. So, you know.
Yeah, that's something new.
Cool.
Yeah,
all right.
You should have done your research.
Okay, I'll give you guys one last chance to ask a question, and then we'll wrap up there. Frosty, do you want to?
No, you stole my question already.
What was it? Newcastle or Oldcastle?
No, it was not that. No, the only thing I really wanted to ask is, by the time you leave the club, whether that's through retirement or moving on, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want to impress on the club and leave behind?
I think it's a big thing for me now is win something.
Mm-hmm.
You play to win, and that would never change. You don't play just to make the numbers up, and you don't play just to be in the A-League. I think for us, it's important we test ourselves, and if we're the underdogs, we'll take that. But for me, it's to leave here with hopefully happy memories and, leave a good legacy.
I feel if you come here and win the league for us, you'll go down in Phoenix history, which would be, I think a lot of us would enjoy that. It'll be really nice after 10, 11 long, hard years to finally win something. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for giving up your time. You didn't have to, so we really appreciate it.
Thanks for the castle questions as well. Appreciate that.
Yes, I am sorry. Thank you so much.
Top man, thank you.
All right, let's talk about some more things in Phoenix Land. We did FFA Cup, or you guys did FFA Cup last week without me, which was
probably better for
good for my mental health, I think, not having to talk about that game. It was shit.
It was not good.
It was almost apologetically bringing it up with the, when we talked to Stephen. So
it was a good question, though.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that, Cam.
Oh, you're welcome.
It went well. That was a good chat. Even Newcastle versus Oldcastle went down well. So,
until he actually tried to ask the questions about Newcastle, Oldcastle, bro.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about things coming up in Phoenixland. I think the biggest thing at the moment is that memberships are on sale. I think it's – is it renewal prices if you've been a member previously? It's $169 or it's $189 new.
No.
You're shaking your head.
Sorry, I don't know. I haven't checked yet.
I frame that as a question. These are facts. I know that for a fact. A silver membership, at least in Yellow Fever, is that price.
I got charged $189.
Well, you did the wrong thing. I think you have to push through a new button on it rather than just go through and buy a package.
Just consider the extra $20 a donation to the club to keep it going for a little bit longer.
Fuck that. Give me my $20.
And official supporters podcast of Yellow Fever.
Stealing money.
I think there is a couple of prizes up if you renew before April the something, 26th, is it?
August the something.
August the something, yeah.
Yeah.
Renew by the end of the season and you'll be in the draw. There is the chance to attend the season launch, which all the players will be at, and there's a chance to go to Melbourne with the team to watch the Phoenix take on, I think it's Melbourne Victory over there.
On November the 9th.
November the 9th.
Is it you and a mate, I think?
Probably two people, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes,
that's right. So that's a thing.
There's the $200 worth of discounts from Hospitality Group.
One Hospitality Group, who run Bethel Woods, and they run the Churchill, the Phoenix Places, and they run a whole bunch of other places around Wellington. And it's surprising how big their empire is, actually. But there's that. There's Hal Pizza are on board. They're back after a few years back off. That was my foot, Frosty, that we've just had a little bit of...
under my chair.
I'm so very sorry. I have moved my legs in. I'm very tall, you see. Hal Pizza are back on board, so I think everybody gets a free pizza with their membership from Hell, and I think that there's very small murmurings that if someone scores a goal, it'll be free pizza again. So we'll hear about that when that all the deal about that gets locked in.
You know much more about that than I do.
Do I?
But I love pizza.
Pizza's great, right? Hell Pizza in particular.
Mm-hmm. Free pizza.
No. Hell Pizza.
Hell Pizza's worth it.
Hell Pizza is worth
free
paying for.
Pizza.
Yeah.
Hell's Pizza is worth paying for.
Yeah.
End of. Best pizza.
Good veggie options too.
Mm. Really, yeah, true. Actually, one of their best ones is the veggie. Yeah.
And Bethel Woods, great bar.
Yeah.
All those bars that work in that hospitality group are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Are we trying to make up for the really bad interview we just did?
No, not really. So yeah, get membership. Obviously, all the reasons that Stephen's just talked about. The football's going to be good. So come and join us in the Fever Zone. I think the student tickets are $45 in the Fever Zone are a thing a game, which is
fantastic,
amazing. It ends up being something like $3 a game, which is ridiculous. So grab yourself a membership if you're a student.
It's almost worth signing up for one course just to get your ID.
No, it's not.
Talk one, because the course will be more expensive.
The course is about $800, but if you're doing it for your student anyway, definitely jump at the chance and bring your friends. We need more people in the Fever Zone always.
Because Stephen seems to be of the opinion that we're going to fill up Westpac again.
Well, I kind of
tried. And we should.
I don't want to disappoint him. He is way too nice a guy.
Yeah,
and he's big. He's tall. He's a unit.
He's tall and he's broad. His shoulders are very broad. I didn't want to.
He has a good handshake on him too.
Oh yeah, my hand when we yes.
Smith-esque.
Yes. So that's membership. There are some preseason games coming up. The Phoenix have just announced that there is going to be a game against Lower Hutt, which is going to be, when is it?
Saturday.
The Saturday this week.
Yep.
Okay.
Martin Lucky.
Oh, interesting. Cool. Then next weekend, the Phoenix are travelling to Palmerston North and playing the curtain raiser for the Central League playoff between North Wellington and Palmerston North Marist. Mm-hmm. They are playing against Napier City Rovers, so meeting them halfway. Obviously, Napier City have won Central League this year, so they are the best team around. So it'd be really cool to see them take on a team like that. So that is 12 p.m. On Sunday the 25th.
Yeah. Festival of football.
Some sort of festival. Festival of Funtacular Football Fun. And then there is going to be the normal Central League 11 taking on the Phoenix up at Wicker Park. I think it's the week after.
September 1st.
So there are 3 weekends of football where you can go out and see the Phoenix in action and see Stephen Taylor in action. Is that it?
I think so.
Have I forgotten something?
No, that sounds about right. Community Day is going to come up, but we're not entirely sure exactly when that's going to be.
Yeah, that's going to be a thing.
September.
September, yeah. September. Like close to the start of the season. So.
Yeah, but that's a thing. We could talk about the under-20s in the islands.
Yeah,
actually,
true.
We could talk about New Zealand football, which we haven't
done for a while.
We haven't done Andrew football for a while. Let's do that. Obviously, both sets of under-20s, women's and men's, are in action. Let's talk about men's first. They finished top of their pool in the under-19 overseas championship.
Comfortably so.
They had a 2-1 win over, was it New Caledonia first up? No, they're playing Tahiti first up. And then there was a 14-0 win over Tonga,
yeah.
Which had the most amazing goal disallowed, in my opinion, wrongly for offside. Mm. Defender tries to clear it with a bicycle kick ahead and ends up just like crossing it perfectly to Joe Bell, who just taps it in. It was ruled out for offside.
For his hat trick.
He would have been his fourth. And then they wrapped up with, what was it?
4-0
win. Four second half goals to set up a semi-final.
Against PNG, who were missing, what, 3 or 4 players due to suspension. A few red cards?
The red cards that they had in their fight with Tahiti, was it?
Well, it wasn't fight with Tahiti. They just went and assaulted half of them. And
Yep, so that's good. But the winner of that game qualifies for the Under-20 World Cup. Mm. So two OFC teams now go to the World Cup, so don't even have to win the final anymore. So it's a big game. When is that game? Is it Saturday? No, it can't be.
I actually thought it was tomorrow.
It must be tomorrow. It must have already happened by the time that you're listening to this podcast. So.
Yeah, so I thought it was like Thursday at 1, but yeah. I could be wrong.
Makes sense. If we're wrong, we'll find out when the game gets played.
And the final will be Sunday.
Yes. And then the under-20 women had their Women's World Cup where they performed quite well, actually. I didn't see any of the games, but the score lines and what I've heard about these games was...
The first two were good.
Yeah, the first two was a 1-0 loss...
To the Netherlands,
and then we had a 0 draw with France.
Yeah.
And then a 1-0 loss to Ghana.
That's correct.
Yeah, so they performed admirably, but I obviously didn't see the games, but I heard that the fighting spirit in that France game, when they were under the pump and probably should have lost that game, but managed to keep it 0 all and give themselves a fighting chance to make it through.
Passion and desire, man. That's what it takes, and that's what they showed.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've heard the conversation about how we're comparing the Football Ferns versus Japan game to that game against France, where you go in and one game, this game, the France game, the Kiwi spirit was present, but in the Japan game it wasn't. And it's interesting going like, in one game we were defensive and we tried to shut up shop and we got Ben 3-1. In another game we went defensive and shut up shop and didn't create much going forward, but drew 0-0. And the mentality difference in those two is huge from the people who watch both games. I didn't see it, obviously.
So. I saw the highlights, and the difference was that literally if they got the ball, they didn't just hoof it down the field and then just drop back to halfway. They were trying to play football when they got the ball. Didn't get it much, to be fair. So.
Okay.
But that's the mentality that we want to see. So as I said at the time, I'm quite comfortable with us playing defensive football. It's just pragmatic and makes sense.
Yeah.
But when you've got the ball, you actually want to see them try and do something with it. And even if that's a pragmatic approach to attacking football, at least you're still trying to do something and not just giving it away.
Mm. And the other thing is that you do it situationally. You do it against a particular team because that's the best way for you to get the result. You don't do it just as a blanket strategy for all teams going forward because we're a small country.
Yeah, well, when you're playing against France in the World Cup, you can't really go out there and try to win it and hope that that's going to be fine. So, yeah. I think now that is actually everything. That exhausts the list of things to talk about this week.
Ryan. PSV
Eindhoven. Thomas, signed for PSV Eindhoven.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a massive, massive signing.
Was it not? Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, PSV Eindhoven. I read it as PSG, which is very different.
Very, very different.
So I've been thinking a week that he signed for PSG.
No.
But he didn't. He signed for PSV in the Eredivisie, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yep.
PSG, PSV, definitely different leagues.
Totally different leagues. But
they did both win their league last year.
And similar names. Let's wrap that up there. Thank you very much for listening. Again, thanks to Stephen Taylor and to the Phoenix for getting him on for us. And we'll be back next week, probably. Unless we decide we don't want to record. But we'll be back next week to talk about preseason and Phoenix again. So we'll see you then. Bye.
Geordie Shore brings you.
Alvedo's own pit brings you.
Impressive biceps bring you.
T-shirts in winter bring you.
Dubai tan a month later brings you.
Smiling while you play brings you. Smiling while you lose brings you.